Okay, so will I let people in then?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning in on this rainy morning. We're just waiting for everyone to join the call and then we'll get going. I'll just give it a few more seconds. Great, I think we'll get going. Welcome to the Signal series, which takes a look at the trends we see in communication. I'm Kirsty Maxey, I'm the CEO of Team Spirit, and I'll be your chair this morning. In this webinar, we're going to be discussing what narrowcast means, why it should be considered as part of your comm strategy, and how to go about it with some practical advice from our own specialists. Before I introduce you to our speakers, can I ask if anyone's got any questions, please do stick them into the chat. And Fiona, who's our producer today, will have a look and share those questions with us. We're going to be talking for approximately 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll have time for questions. So first up, let's introduce you to Jim and Ursula, who are joining me today to share their different perspectives on what narrowcast can deliver for clients. Jim Poulter is our Client Services Director, and he's been working in financial services for over 20 years. He's particularly experienced in running branding communication campaigns, both below and above the line, and is one of our lead generation specialists.
Hi,
Jim. Thanks for joining us. And secondly, Ursula Delaney is one of our PR directors who's worked in PR for over 15 years, and she helps clients to transform their reputations and create distinct narratives, which increasingly she sees an alignment between PR and social campaigning.
Hi there.
Welcome, Ursula. Thanks for joining us. So let's crack on. Jim, let's start with you. From your own area of expertise, what do you mean when you talk about narrowcast?
Okay, well, thanks, Kirsty. I mean, I guess at the moment, narrowcast is at its simplest a way of sort of, you know, focusing effort on challenging times for marketers. But I think really, from my point of view, it's about focusing on a small and discrete part of a larger target audience. And the key really is to identify the right audience who your efforts are going to be engaging and ones that will generate traction. That could be sales or that could even be brand attribution. I think that's, for me, that's the important thing, making sure you've got the right audience and then selecting the channels, the media and the content that will lean into that audience. So that really it's impossible then for either not to see your marketing communications or not to feel some sort of empathy and engagement with it. I mean, clearly, digital has been a massive influence on all this. And in fact, you know, the micro influencer, as I said, has been particularly important. They're providing a quite an easy way to generate interesting content for a very targeted audience. But although it's a small audience, it doesn't necessarily follow that the impact is just limited to them. I mean, as our ESG paper highlighted recently, a halo effect when an effective narrowcast campaign can be really powerful. But interestingly, as I was discussing with Ursula, even PR is becoming sort of, you know, impacted by the world of the narrowcast.
Absolutely, Jim. And the two points I wanted to pick up that you mentioned, firstly, the obviously omnipresent influence of digital and social, which is hugely influencing PR now, but also the halo effect, which I'll come on to later. And that's I think, what's driving a lot of the interest movement of PR, which many would think is intrinsically a broadcast medium into this area. Typically, marketers would use PR as a way of kind of slowly building brand momentum and fame for brands at the top of the funnel, whilst other elements of the marketing mix would be responsible for doing the more detailed messaging. Now, there obviously was an opportunity for segmentation. I know you and I worked on a project for an advisor tech business way back, looking where one of the strands of activity was looking at the paraplanner market, where we'd actually refine the messages specifically to target their kind of titles and with an idea of kind of bringing them through and coming to seminars and the likes of that. But this kind of micro-targeting has really come into its own at the moment. And I think though there's obviously an economic kind of reason behind this, there are also really important targeting aspects too. So it's in PR terms, it's everything from the fact that there's diminishing presence of audience figures for traditional broadcast and media, and that's encouraging people to look elsewhere. But also it's the kind of applied learnings. Micro-influencers have worked hugely well, they've been hugely potent, and now so that people are seeing the value of kind of targeting, not just looking broad brush, but actually targeting a few people really often and looking a bit more integrated in their communications too.
Yes, thanks Ursula. I think what would be really helpful for the people listening is, could you share some examples of narrowcast in action so you can actually talk about how they've been used?
Yes,
of course.
Narrowcast thinking is not the norm yet in PR, but I would say that some of the most innovative work that we've done at the moment had a narrowcast element, as marketers are grasping the kind of the real benefits there. So two projects for me stand out. Firstly, there's one we did for Rathbones, actually, which drilled down into high net worth sentiment in Scotland post-pandemic. And that was really looking at getting absolutely into tiny communities in the Highlands and Islands and finding out what they think and they think and felt. The rationale behind it was that Rathbones is like a UK headquartered an English headquartered business, had actually recently acquired a Scottish advisory business, and they wanted to make it clear that Scotland, that they could speak for Scotland, that they had something valid to say. So what we did was really hone down the message to do a tailored piece of research which would look right into that, and reinforced it with local case studies and with focus groups, and that actually worked really well for them. It really exceeded expectations, getting into all the local media there, as well as laddering up for national message. But also it meant that we could kind of knock on doors and go out there. And the second one, this is a little bit further back, and it's an integrated piece, but was Dream Bigger, that we did for the then Smith Williamson, now Evelyn Partners. And that was actually really smart because it used kind of macro kind of PR things for the themes, but then it drove the message through the SME audience so that you could have highly tailored content via a tool. So you could actually kind of, you're encouraged an SME in say Birmingham or Manchester to come in and find a highly personalized content package directly for you. And that actually sold all their seminars and really demonstrated that Smith and Williams were under the skin of business. I don't know what you'd find, Jim, on that score.
Well, I mean, I think every single campaign, almost every campaign has ever had some sort of narrowcast lens, because we're always going to want to use media smartly and reduce wastage. And there are things, I remember my first agency doing a campaign that was the chairman's route to work. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, that's a narrowcast audience of one. But I think about it bigger, I think really now we're seeing interesting ways that we can marry geo or hyper-focused targeting with genuinely specific content. That for me is in the consumer space really important. So for example, for a wealth manager, we ran a campaign looking at towns just in the M4 corridor, just around Reading and around Swindon, whereby you can start to talk to them about their specific interests, such as property prices, their specific commuting costs. Those are the kind of things that will make it relevant rather than just generically about the country. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for the consumer space. I think for the B2B space, it's where you have approaches that really focus on a very specific vertical audience. That's so important. So, for example, we've worked in the past for a number of funding businesses, and rather than talking about funding SMEs generally, because everybody knows that every SME is slightly different and they all think about their own businesses being unique, then maybe we, in the past, we've done one when we talked about recruitment businesses in the tech sector, okay, with very specific needs, very specific problems in their sector, and focusing the content on what they exactly wanted. And similarly did one where we talked about construction, but not just construction, but about subcontractors in the construction industry. So you can see, rather than talking about broadly, you can really focus down to the things that matter to the audience. And that's what's going to make them understand and really find your content and your information resonate for them.
Absolutely.
And both very, very successful campaigns. Yeah. In terms of just being pragmatic now, how should any marketeer start to create a narrowcast lens? So if they're starting to think about it for the next 6 months, a year, Jim, what would you say?
Well, I think first and the most fundamental thing, I think, is to build a really robust persona for that audience, you know, not just one that looks about how you can identify them, but one that really digs into how they consume content. Mm-hmm. Where are they consuming content? What are they consuming? Are there any influencers? What are the things that are interesting to them? Because I think that's really important, firstly. And then once you've got that, then I think you've really got to be very honest with yourselves and your business and ask the question, is what you offer going to really, really help them? What's your niche? What's your expertise? Have you got a case study or insight that's going to speak directly to them and really emotionally? You know, mm-hmm. I think having case studies that prove your point are so important, particularly in B2B, where often your audience is going to need to justify their decision to others who are less experts. So having a really solid case study is very important. And in fact, research from one of our sister companies in evidence shows that the right case study can increase or improve purchase decisions by up to 25%. So you can see why getting the really important content that's really relevant to your audience is so important. And then finally, once you've done that, you've thought about your persona, you've thought about your content, then if it's relevant, particularly, is how you're going to support the sales team. You know, quite often we find in these kind of sort of very narrow cast campaigns, there needs to be a hand in glove, seamless passing of information between the marketing team and the sales team. So can you give the sales team the tools that will dovetail with what you're offering? You know, are there battle cards, for example, or things that will help them when they're meeting their audience, get them nodding over the table face to face?
That's great advice. Thanks, Jim. And Ursha, just thinking about it now more from a PR perspective, what are the first things you think about?
Well, I guess from a PR perspective, the first thing is quite basic, is whether you're actually getting real value from your current strategy. I think with PR particularly, it's quite possible to be successful in terms of achieving amazing coverage. So even up and to including things like profiles in the FT or looking at a big sofa slot and broadcast, but it not to convert back to what you kind of what you actually would like to achieve in real return on investment. So I guess kind of looking at the metrics and seeing, am I actually kind of moving the dial? Am I getting what I want from that? And to do that, you really need to think back to the strategy and see whether it's aligned to your business goals. Looking at what Jim mentioned, the idea of personas, are there particular people you want to notice? And that's your starting point. But then also, I think there's really been fundamental changes in how people consume, how much and how people consume media. So for example, if you're looking at, say, an IT decision maker, text decision, that maybe they do leaf through the kind of the broadsheets of the weekend and they have a couple of trades they'd have on the, but actually equally important are all their LinkedIn and networks. And actually, so more of an integrated approach, which tackles that person in all their aspects is really important. And the third thing I mentioned is, you know, this is a new approach. So if you're considering it, just think the metrics to make sure that they're actually kind of, you're getting what you want from that. Yeah, over to measure.
I think that's a great point, Ursula. Just before we go into the next question, just a reminder, if anybody's got any questions at all, please do stick them in the chat channel and we'll pick them up at the end. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So just going back to your point, Ursula, in terms of metrics, making sure that we're considering them all from different perspectives, what are the kind of things you should consider when you're evaluating success?
Well, it starts from there's actually an internal job to be done first. Basically, if you're looking narrowcast or considering that metric, you aren't going to be getting kind of it's much harder and a much cruder metric to look at volume and value. So, you know, if I was doing something for like the ABI PLSA campaign, pension attention, you do want hundreds of pieces of coverage because it's volume you're looking at and the quality that way. But actually, there needs to be a much more nuanced approach with narrowcast. You want to make sure that you're hitting the right person and that they're getting engagement. So it's more about the titles you're hitting, what kind of messages, penetration you're getting, and and whether people actually, it's converting. So actually I'd add in not just the press cutting service, but actually look at things like web metrics to see how many people are actually coming to your site, or even considering building in a kind of call to action. So you can see in terms of seminars attended or kind of events or kind of people going to the website for some materials there. So that's it's a bit of a change.
I think that's really important. So I mean, the fundamental of a narrowcast campaign is that it needs to be more engaging to fewer people. Mm. So the first thing to do is to make sure that everybody in the business recognises there's going to be a change of emphasis, because numbers will go down inevitably. So the most important thing is to make sure you've got that groundwork so everybody is aware of the plan before you start engaging on it, and then start thinking about the metrics that will demonstrate that engagement factor. So rather than simply page visits and visitor numbers, could we think about dwell time on the web pages? Rather than simply those who hit play on a video, how many have watched at least 75% of a video? So start building the metrics that will demonstrate an engagement and a long-term interest rather than simply the crude numbers on the top. And I think we've already talked about this slightly in the past, haven't we, about this idea of the sales team. So making sure you're working with the sales team to make sure the handover works. So how are leads going to be handed over? And have you taken the time to agree on a few key things? So what's a marketing qualified lead or an MQL? And what's a sales qualified lead, an SQL, you know? And really, you have to make sure you've agreed that in advance before the campaign starts, because these things are really hard to agree on the fly. Obviously, you can optimize the campaign, but ensuring the building blocks rather in place all the way through is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a total reframing of success, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that when we build dashboards for clients, you can start to really understand what's working and what's not working directly in real time. So finally, just thinking about helping clients in terms of managing their budgets this year, narrowcast is one way to do that. From your perspective, Ursula, is narrowcast here to stay, or is it just a thing right now?
Oh no, I absolutely think we're in the beginning of only at the beginning of evolution of narrowcast. And I would say that economic considerations are putting it on the map this year, but I don't think that's what's going to keep it there. I honestly think that, you know, that what's really powerful about it is that narrowcast can serve consumers much more tailored content, and the way it interplays with broader brand messaging, certainly in a PR context, I think it works really well. So in the short term, I think you will see kind of a lot of smaller scale integrated campaigns, which make smart use of PR interplaying with social. But longer term, I think it could really revolutionise how we manage kind of reputation and do things like beta testing in the broad. So which I think will be really exciting to see.
Yeah, thank you, Ursula. And Jim, lastly, over to you. What other techniques do you think we should be considering?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you're using narrowcast, then there are a couple of options that you could consider that might do something quite similar. The first thing is member get member. Obviously, if you have a strong brand that's liked by your customers or your clients or your consumers, you'd like to think they will talk about it. And actually, if you can get a powerful member get member offer organized, that can be a really, really good way to generate significant input in engagement and sales without spending a large amount on media. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in some of the ways, you can even get it so that the campaign is self-funding, in the sense that, you know, the offer you make to your consumers to promote to others can actually be covered in the cost of the sale. So there's a number of ways of doing that. The other one, obviously, is the V word, you know, viral. You know, and I've seen on YouTube, you know, five ways to make your video more viral. In our experience as the agency, there is no silver bullet. There is no silver bullet to make things viral. There's no formula. But I think actually what it does tell you is you need to really actively look at new, engaging and creative. And I've seen, I think, probably James's question in the chat, creative ways to get your message across. I mean, I think, as Ursula already mentioned, I'll pay some attention to your pension campaign for the RBI. Allowed that or demonstrated the power of that, because we were looking at a new and crucially unexpected way to bring your campaign to the audience that you're talking about. And actually, as we talked about in that campaign, this was all about the people in their 20s, late 20s and 30s, talking about their pensions. Hence, we used the grime artist Big Zoo. But in fact, what we also found, as well as massively strong engagement with them, also a microcosm of the great and the good. So, for example, professional pensions, some of the pension titles, the broadsheets, they were all talking about this because it generated that halo of activity. This is somebody doing something new and different. And I think really that idea of creativity and the unexpected is so important in this way. So, yes, you do need to consider other things than pure narrowcast, but other ways to make sure that your budget will go further can be equally valid.
Yeah.
Could I
add one thing to that as well? Yeah. I think that it's that narrowcast can't exist in a vacuum. It has to ladder up to a broader brand purpose. And I think that that's where the power is, I think, so that you can target a specific audience, but within something which is understood.
Good point. Thanks, Ursula. Well, thank you both for sharing that valuable insight. Fiona, I think you've got some questions for us from the audience this morning. Do you want to share those with us?
Yeah, we have indeed. Morning, everybody. So the first question, maybe to Ursula initially, is do you think a series of narrowcast campaigns can run alongside each other to varying audiences, or would you discourage that?
No, I do think they can. I think that it's as long as they're well organized and it's really clear how they're segmented. And just to my last point just then as well, I think as long as they sit within a coherent whole, so I could see easily we could look. So, for example, when we look at the next stage of pension attention, there is some talk about maybe whether we look at some segments of that. And then I think we would run those, but with an understanding that it's under that umbrella. So, yes, as long as they're well organised, I do think that they can. I don't know what you'd think, Jim.
Well, to me, actually, I think you're right. But I think the bigger potential problem is, do you have the resources internally to do it properly?
Okay.
Narrowcast means you have to get into the detail, you have to come up with a really compelling series of messages and content for an audience, and doing that once is hard enough. Doing it three or four times will inevitably take up time like blotting paper, so you need to be really careful. There is no point in thinking I'll do four narrowcast campaigns and do four of them at a very light touch superficial level. You really have to get into it. So my suggestion will be, do one properly, maybe with some other activity around it, but don't try to do too many ones because you will fall over internally trying to get things sorted out, because it's very resource heavy getting these set up.
And I guess to your point, there's the authenticity piece as well. This kind of stands and falls by whether you actually, it passes the smell test. And so that's really important too.
Absolutely.
Okay, another question. How would you describe the difference between narrowcast and account-based marketing? And perhaps that's one for you, Jim, with your more lead gen.
Yeah, surely. So account-based marketing, I would say, works on the premise that in large organizations, there are a number of different stakeholders. Okay, so you might have somebody in sales over here, in marketing over here, and possibly in accounts over here. Okay, and the premise of account-based marketing is that you are targeting all the various strands within that single organization or organization similarly. I think narrowcasting is not talking about the vertical sector, but more about a slightly broader sector. So it's talking about those who share a few common denominators. So it could be in the narrowcast version might be rather than trying to do account-based marketing with three or four strands per business decision. You are talking about, I don't know, accountants in these kind of firms. So you're talking maybe about accountants in construction firms. That would be a narrowcast version rather than going after the construction firms themselves, if that makes sense.
Another one. Other examples where narrowcast might have been the smarter option that you can share?
I have an example, not from the FS sector, but from it's BrewDog, actually. And I think, in general, I think one of the real strengths of narrowcast is that it helps clean up of issues management. And this is exactly what they didn't do. So you may recall that last year that they having had quite a kind of WeWork kind of trendy atmosphere, they were actually exposed as being quite a difficult place to work, and with a kind of negative kind of profile for their work culture. And they basically styled it out. They didn't really address it at all. And yet subsequently, so they put out firstly, an announcement around the World Cup, where they said they were taking a principled stance and they wouldn't participate in a lot of the kind of drinks sponsorship around the World Cup. And then subsequently, they took a major, they did a major deal with China. So all of that jarred. They firstly hadn't cleaned up their reputation, which they could have done quite subtly using particular titles and managed that. And then none of their subsequent pieces, which were all issued broadcast as part of, you know, their company results and kind of development, it didn't tackle it. And so I think the brand damage, that they look disjointed, they don't look as, and they could have managed that through some subtle narrowcast management of the message.
I mean, I think from my, I don't have a particular example, but what I would say is that the asset management or the wealth management industry generally is focused on people with £500,000 in their liquid assets. Mm-hmm. And if I could tell you the number of times I've seen targeting me, you know, as in my 50s, as somebody, have you got £150,000, £200,000, £500,000? None of it is talking to me as a person. So these are messages that this sort of being blown out across the across the airwaves, as it were, in the hope that enough people will talk to me. But actually, if somebody was to talk in the sector about what I might want with my money rather than the amount of money I've got, I think that would be an interesting way of doing it.
Great. We have another one, which was back to your how do you get the right metrics in the beginning. Any tips on how to manage the metric conversation internally with stakeholders?
Well, sorry, I've jumped in. Sorry, I still have to you.
No, go for it.
Fair enough. I mean, I suppose from my point of view, the most important thing is to have the conversation early and explain what you're doing and then explain what success will look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, the narrow cast view, unless the offer is really, really, really strong, will probably take a bit longer. So you need to make sure the business has been signposting. So you need to make sure that you have taken the time to populate the sales funnel. So you can start to tell the people, these are the number of people coming through, this is how engaged they are, these are the number of leads, and these are the warm conversations that our sales department is having already. Once you start to send the whole sales funnel, then it becomes a little bit easier, because what you're hoping is, instead of a funnel like that, you're wanting one more like that. But it's important to put them in, but make sure you've populated the sales funnel with useful metrics that you can play back to the business so they know how you're getting on.
You see, I think you can lean in quite a lot to what they're doing in sales and make the sales team your ambassador, because a traditional way of looking at PR doesn't necessarily focus that much on it. So if we can actually tell them that you're targeting these personas, and we now know a little bit more about them, what they read, the kind of messages that resonate to that, and then explain to them that, yes, that's a reframing of what you're going to get. So you won't necessarily, you may not be targeting the nationals as much as you used to. But then I think you have that conversation up front. I think it makes it clear that there's a different measure of success.
And we have one final question. If anyone else would like to add some in, now is your moment. The final question we have is, it sounds like personalized targeting, but is it more about personalizing language to relate to a segment?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. Is it just the language? I think it's more than just the language. I think it's more than just the language. I think it's showing things that will really say, oh, that's interesting. And going back to my point about doing the homework to start with, making sure you've got some really compelling insight and evidence that is just relevant to the audience, that will speak to them, and will be ignored by somebody else. To me, the acid test is, if you show that to somebody who's not in your narrowcast audience, will they get it? If they don't, then that's probably a good thing. It probably means you really are hitting the narrowcast audience properly.
It comes down to a value exchange, doesn't it, Jim? You know, it's I'm going to give you my time because there's something you're going to share with me that's really important to me.
I can see from what you're giving in my feed, what you're showing me, that you really understand it. This is more than just superficial.
And I'd also argue that narrowcast may be hitting people, but it doesn't jar with anything else. So, you know, you won't kind of look at it and say, oh, they're speaking to kind of Gen Z here. But, you know, it should feel part of the coherent whole as well. It's not going to, you know, cause a problem having that message. I was going to say one of the areas that I think people will be looking narrowcast is in the election coming up, and making sure, because there are very different strands of activity and messaging which will go, say, to the red wall and to the blue wall, and they will be nuanced, but there's a meshing together to make sure that they fit a coherent whole. We'll see whether that works.
Yeah, they'll be interesting to watch. Yeah. Ursula, thanks, Jim. Just finishing up, I think one of the things that I've seen in terms of B2B in particular communications is the emphasis on the science side of communications. So you find that a lot of companies will really put a lot of detail in here. And I think back to James's point, balancing that with the art as well and making sure that, that comms are still really impactful at this level is really important. So the use of imagery, photography, video, etc., all helps to really get that engagement. Thank you both. Fiona, I think that's it in terms of the questions.
It is indeed.
We are just 1 minute over. Thank you everyone for joining us this morning. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.